Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Online, on your mobile, and on FM.
From the home of time.
This is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his home. Sweet song, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red, live, love, love and be happy. What if I be blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
You know what? Something about yesterday just left me feeling very, very upbeat. Grimaces aside, good evening and welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. My name is Louis Mendez. Tonight's show, we're going to look back at yesterday's fantastic 2-1 win. Almost automatically said defeat there, the 2-1 win against Southend here at the Valley. And also, of course, yesterday was Upbeats Day, and we've got extensive coverage of the wonderful Upbeats, their walk to the Valley, and we've even got commentary highlights of their game, which we're going to hear later on, as well as interviews with legends. And starting you off with legends in the studio, Terry Smith. How are you doing, Terry?
That could have been either of us, Tom. Good evening. How are you?
Yeah, you're right, yeah?
Yeah. Is that me?
Yep.
Slightly the worst for wear.
Yeah, after your walk.
In terms of physical ability, but other than that, I'm fine.
Any bits and pieces still in the correct places?
No, half of them are still around Eltham somewhere.
Yeah, excellent. Right, and joining the pair of us, a fellow walker on yesterday's Upbeats march is Tom Walling. How are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah? Much happier than Thursday, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Thursday was a very sad show. Today's a much better show. And your bits and pieces?
Mine are fine. Yeah. So I played tennis today thinking I felt fine, and now I'm ruined. So.
Yeah. He's got much younger bits and pieces than I have. So
that's yeah. Well, there you go. So on tonight's show, we're going to look back at that wonderful win against Southend yesterday. We're going to hear exclusively from Carl Robertson after the game, and then it's the last half an hour, 45 minutes or so of the show is going to be all about the Upbeats. We've got interviews with Jason Morgan, who's from the Charlton Athletic Community Trust. Who have we got? We've got Mike Flanagan, we've got Paul Mortimer, we've got Bob Boulder, who eventually turned up. We've got Simon Webster. I think that's it. I think that's everyone we got. But that's not a bad lineup of interviews to have after yesterday's game. And of course, Carl Robertson had a little word to say about the Upbeats as well, so hear from him. But first things first, obviously, we're going to look back at yesterday's victory. Terry, and well, that's problem solved. We're safe.
Yeah, well, we're 2 points ahead of where I thought we'd be after we last weekend when we were mulling over what were going to happen on the Tuesday and then in the and then the Saturday. But chalk and cheese between what happened at MK Dons on the Tuesday evening and then what happened yesterday. Just, I mean, it must. And I know everybody can maybe lay the blame at Carl Ramsey's door, and probably quite rightly so. He's the manager, he's probably got to take the majority of the criticism. But when you look at the side and what the side did on Tuesday evening, there weren't, all right, there were a few changes, but not horrendous changes that should affect the outcome in the way that it did. But the side just played completely differently. Mm. And that must be so frustrating. I mean, however good or bad a manager you are, when you see you put a side out and they perform so badly, and then you put the majority of the same players out the following week, and it's a different side. It must be pulling your hair out stuff.
Mm, yeah, I mean, that was the main question, is why was it so different from Tuesday?
Mm. Oh, Olverstad was in, wasn't he? So.
Problem solved. There you go. I wonder that that the whole difference between what the evening was about on Tuesday compared to what the day was about on Saturday, two different, completely different reasons for being there. I do wonder if that had some effect. I mean, I'm not trying to make excuses here, by the way. Please don't get me wrong. But I do wonder in the mindset of people whether or not the mood is different and was different, and therefore that could attribute. Not the reason.
I think Nath mentioned it on Thursday that the inconsistency has been our big problem all season, because we have pulled out good performances against teams. So, like, I think we pointed out Bradford at home was a good game. Sheffield United away was a good game. We've had games earlier on in the season where we, like, brushed aside a poor Shrewsbury team. So we've had those games in us and we just haven't done them consistently. And then we come up against teams like Oldham or like Peterborough last weekend and we just bowl over and let them beat us. But yesterday we were back to what I expect our kind of normal level to be. The players were putting the effort in. I think the opposition helped us in that on Tuesday night MK Dons focused down the flanks and our diamond then got a bit exposed, whereas Southend tried to play through us and that worked to our advantage. But our players just seemed to work harder, seemed to just be more up for it, really.
Mm. Excellent. Well, let's hope that they continue that for the rest of the season. I think always we play the highlights on this show. Not always is it that much enjoyable. Today it is, and this is Terry and Greg taking you through yesterday's 2-1 win against Southend.
McGuinness out to his left as Holmes in a bit of space. Ricky Holmes corner of the penalty area, inside the penalty area. Holmes bringing the ball forward to the byline. Ricky Holmes! Ricky Holmes with a lovely goal set up by Josh McGuinness. He ran towards that penalty area, went towards the byline, cut it across goal and found the far corner. Lovely finish from Ricky Holmes, and Charlton have the lead.
Oh, well, superb work on that left-hand side from Ricky. I mean, it happened just before then when Esri Konsa broke up play and came away with it. He did it again, as did Ricky Holmes on the left-hand side. But Esri Konsa found McGuinness, whose instant ball to his right-hand side, the Charlton left, picked out Ricky Holmes. He wanted to come to his right. He was shown the left-hand side, so he took it, and then his left-hand shot squirmed into the near post, and Christian Walton in the South End goal will probably be asking himself questions later on as to how that managed to get past him. But Charlton with a perfect start to the game.
Corner to be taken by Timlin. It's in a good area. There's a free header. And South End equalise. John White, who heads it home. Michael Timlin's corner to the far post, totally free. It's John White. And South End a level.
I said we had to be strong. I said we had to keep this tight. I mean, allow John White the freedom of the city from a corner, the far side of the 6-yard box, nobody anywhere near him. And he just had to pick his spot. And that was at the far side from where Declan Rudd was tracking the ball across. No way he's getting back for that. Charlton shoot themselves in the foot a little bit there.
De Silva will have to deal with it, but he hits it straight back into the middle for Robinson. Goes for the return, Robinson, and he's into the penalty area. Bale will come across. It's a near post effort that squirms away from Declan Rudd, who got something on it. And lucky he didn't see that squirm inside the post. It's a Charlton corner on this near side. Ricky Holmes are preparing to take it. Swung in. It's a dangerous one. McGuinness with a header and it's cleared off the line. McGuinness, an overhead kick. Handball must be.
It's got to be in. What else happened?
Ball must have squirmed in. It's a definite handball as well. Absolute chaos in that 6-yard box. First McGuinness's header and then a whole host of bodies trying to get a foot to it. looked like it came off her south end arm, and then it squirmed onto the post. It looked for all the world like it had gone over, but nothing given from the officials.
And it'll go to Robinson, but it's a good tackle from Crofts. But Southend clear the lines anyway, and he must
onside,
be offside, Robinson.
No, he's onside.
He's Finnan McLaughlin. He goes up to Declan Rudd. What a save that is. Declan Rudd does superbly well, but they're still queuing up Southend. Back to Cox. Great defending from Bauer this time, but Declan Rudd saves Charlton.
Movement in the box. One of those is Bauer, the others is Konza. ricochet off Red Chanel.
Dropped across. Cross with the shot. Oh! Just wide right of the post. Still on the right-hand side. Ball back across the penalty area, cleared away by O'Neill, but it'll drop straight to Croft. Croft has got Overstad to his right. Overstad still with Byrne on the outside. Byrne will take on McLaughlin. Goes right, then chips the ball back in the box. McGuinness is there, as is Overstad. And it's in!
McCaskey
has buried the header. Sort of came off the floor, in up to the crossbar and back in, and Charlton have the lead.
Oh, it looked like he missed it, Jake Forskowski. Perfect cross, right onto the head of the former Brighton man. Just got something on it. It wasn't the cleanest of connections. He found the net. Great play from Nathan Byrne on the right-hand side. Beautiful ball in. Perfect for Forskowski. It's actually an own goal,
own
you know.
Goal. Just looking at the replay, I think it's come off to that Thompson.
I'm giving it to Forskowski for now, but that may well be taken off. This time to Scherer with a header clear. So Neil gets it back in the box, pinging around the edge of the penalty area. It's McGlashan with a shot across the box. Oh, and added. Boot nobly missed that.
Oh, unbelievable.
He's in the back of the net, and the ball's in the back of the Jimmy Seed.
Unbelievable chance for Frank Newbel. McGlashan gets a bit of space on the left-hand side, drills it across, and he's
is
just headed
that
wide.
The piece of luck that's going to affect Charlton's season? Ward knocks it forward, and there's the final whistle!
Yay.
A final 3 points for Charlton in a battle to stay in this league.
I completely forgot I put all those in last night when I made that.
someone had fun with the Wii button.
we won. That was good. I mean, that last, if you want a heart in the mouth moment, you hope it falls to Frank Lublé, don't you?
How did he miss that? I mean, it was almost like he just had to let it hit him. I don't know why I'm feeding back.
Here's some headphones are playing up. The headphones are playing up, don't worry.
Okay, I'll take them off then. it almost looked like it just had to let it hit him, and quite what he was doing, but he ran at some force because he ended up bulging the back of the net, unfortunately. When he first hit the net, I thought the ball was with him, I've got to be honest, but how he missed it, I don't know, and I'm really pleased he did, obviously. But as I said on the commentary, is that the bit of luck we've been missing? Because we haven't had a great deal of it.
Yeah, certainly haven't. Do you think, as the way the game started, obviously that was the perfect start for us, Tom, and we're saying when Ricky Holmes picks up the ball, the last thing you expect him was to be able to score from the position he was in, because he ran to such a tight angle. I thought there's no way he's going to be able to find the back of the net from there. But if there's one player in our team who's going to be able to do it, it would be him.
Yeah, I kept every time he sort of shuffled a bit further forward and stopped, and you thought, oh, he's going to cut in, and he didn't. And then a little bit further, cut in. No, he's still going. Got down to what I thought from where we sit was the byline. I went, oh, fine, he's going to cross it. Next thing I know, it's in the back of the net. And it took a while to realise he'd even scored it. But as you say, he's the man we want in that situation. He's dragged us through games before with his goals. And it was the perfect start because we've fallen behind recently in games. And that's kind of killed us. But that goal kind of just seemed to calm everyone down. I know it wasn't that long before they were back level. But it was the perfect start that we needed. And as you say, Ricky Holmes is probably the perfect man to have done it as well.
Yeah, because when you get off to a good start like that, then how you react to that is how you sort of keep that lead for as long as possible is so important. So then the manner of the goal we conceded 5 minutes later from that corner kick, and you know, corners were our Achilles heel last season. I think we conceded from over 20 of them, which is just ridiculous. But it's sort of, at the start of this season, we had that problem again, but it seemed to have sort of calmed down a bit.
That, in the position we're in, we were desperate, and I said it was really important for us to hang on. I mean, not hang on is probably not the right phrase, but to certainly strengthen and sort of batten down the hatches for about 10, 15 minutes, get some possession, frustrate Southend a bit, and we didn't do it, clearly. I mean, and to be fair, though, I mean, was it probably Southend's first effort on goal, I think, in that opening 10 minutes, and we just left a centre-half all on his own at the edge of the six-yard box, and he's always going to score from there.
I guess if it was Southend's first effort on goal and we're talking like half an hour, then that's probably fair.
Yeah, fair enough, but the point I'm making is that, you know, to succumb to their first real meaningful attack especially just after we scored, is shows probably what's been our problem. And Tom mentioned it before about inconsistency, but you know, not doing the basics right, and that's probably the reason we are inconsistent, and the reason we do let sides back into it quickly, or succumb to goals against sides we should be beating.
Such a rubbish goal to concede as well. When someone sixth in the league is coming here, okay, we don't think we should be down there, but the truth is we are. You know that they're going to be a side that's going to look to try and score quickly. So those things, the things you can train, like set pieces, we should be better on. Because if they break through with some classy passing move and score, you have to hold your hands up and go, fair enough, that's too good for us. But to leave him so unmarked, it was such a simple goal for them to score. It's just so frustrating because, as you say, we'd worked hard, we'd got ourselves in front for a change, and then just threw it all away.
It's quite a quiet for the rest of the first half, really. And now I found it interesting, when I was going back through the highlights, I listened to your half-time sort of gambit, and you said you felt that Charlton had edged the first half, which I thought I don't think I would have gone that far.
Only in terms of, in my opinion, only in terms of the forward momentum. I think after Southend scored, there was sort of like the first 15, 20 minutes were quite active. But after that, as you mentioned, it just sort of died off a bit. But I didn't think Southend troubled us that much. I thought any sort of forward momentum came from us. I mean, there wasn't much in it. I'm not saying we were so much better, but I did think we edged it, yeah.
But when you, I guess when you, the fact that we're having this debate suggests that it was certainly close at least, but the fact that we had five men in midfield probably helped that. When we're going up against a Southend team, it seems like quite a risky move when you're going to a five-man midfield to have four of the players coming in there having not played in the last game, some of them for even longer, and to make four changes all in the midfield. Yeah, it's a risky move, but it seemed like it paid off.
Sort of, yeah. I think the one thing that troubled me in the first half was he seemed to let, I think it was Amos, their central midfield player, have far too much room. And I think that got changed.
He was getting into the penalty area quite a lot.
Yeah, that got changed in the second half. He didn't quite have the same sort of room in the second half as he did in the first. But aside from that, I didn't think they looked like they were troubling us at all.
Second half, again, sort of. I thought Southend came on the front foot then, and we saw a big chance early on where Theo Robinson was denied by Rudd at his near post, and then not too long after that we had our chance off the line, and you know. But I think Southend probably started the second half on top.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, when I mentioned the first half, I didn't think they troubled us. Second half, they certainly did, especially in the opening stages of it. And we. I mean, you got to applaud Declan Rudd. The first save he made was a bit of a squirmy effort, and we were lucky not to see that going in between his legs or whatever. But after that, he pulled off a couple of saves. One from the free kick, he got that break where, again, we got caught out by, wasn't necessarily a ball over the top, but a ball behind us.
Yeah, and McLaughlin kept bearing down on goal, and he tried to take it around Rudd, didn't he? But Rudd did so well to stand up. See, he's had his detractors in the last few games, but I think he certainly helped to sort of quiet them down yesterday.
Yeah, well, I've been one of them. I've thought, you know, someone who emailed in on Thursday said he felt Phillips had been harshly treated by losing his place. But I think, you know, Rudd's our number one and was always going to come back in when fit. But I do think he's had a few mistakes in him, particularly from set pieces. I think he's looked a little nervy, but that save effectively won us the game. And it was such an important thing, and it gave the team momentum again and really fired us back up. And it was, because it wasn't an easy save to make. He timed his run out perfectly, timed his challenge perfectly, because obviously there was a chance of giving away a penalty, and then was quick up as well to then recover for the next attack. So, yeah, I thought he did brilliantly well there.
Yeah, now we'd already sort of half mentioned it there, but just before Rudd had to make that save from McLaughlin, we'd had our huge chance where it seemed to possibly... Did it cross the line? One of those sort of things. There are a couple of people in the stand behind the guy on the cover then tweeted saying they thought it crossed the line. From where I was, I had absolutely no idea. Any idea, Tom, you'd be
behind the guy, and to me it didn't look like it did. Yeah. I think there was one point where it rolled across the line, but I don't think the ball went over, unfortunately.
Yeah. I was near you, and there's no way we can tell it was over the line, but I was convinced it was a handball just before that.
Yeah, because I mean, McGuinness had a header, and then was there an overhead kick? There's all sorts of chaos going on.
And then it was bouncing around. I didn't see who actually got the final touch from a Charlton point of view, because there were so many bodies in the box in front of each other. But there was definitely a blue-shirted arm stuck out, and you could argue that the referee might have seen it and thought, well, it wasn't intentional, blah blah blah, or it didn't affect the direction of the ball. But I was convinced it hit somebody's hand or a Southend player's hand.
Now, not long after, we saw Andrew Cross just have a drive sort of across the face of goal, which was so close to finally getting to use this Andrew Cross tweet I've had in my drafts for months. And then it was not long after that we had the change of Konza for Forster Kaski. and we sort of went to a 4, it looked like a 4-1-4-1 with Cross sitting behind the defence, and then not long after that we scored, and at the time I gave it to Forster Kaski, but it's quite clearly an own goal.
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping, I thought Forster Kaski got something on it first, and I'm sort of hoping then, and I said it on comms, that I thought it might go down as an own goal, but then I was convincing myself later on in the evening that maybe the ball was going towards goal anyway, before, I think it was Thompson, got the final touch. Because I think the rules say if the shot's on target, even if it takes a deflection into the goal, it's still classed as that player's goal. But having watched it back again, I don't think it was going to win.
Yeah.
I don't think there was enough of a touch from Forster Kaski to go anywhere, let alone anywhere near the goal. Yeah. So I think it's definitely an own goal.
Yeah, Mark's just tweeted in and says, I sit even closer than Tom, and it definitely didn't cross the line. So I hope your bits and pieces are right, Mark, because he did the walk as well, as we well know.
He's a chef. If his bits and pieces have fallen off, he'd have cooked them by now.
Nice. I completely wasted my JFC as finger looking good, finger licking good tweet on that goal as well.
Did you? Never mind.
Yeah, had potential to be great, but there you go. And then what happens then for the rest of the game is that's where you start to weigh up any sort of character that we've had, because you know when you're up against a team that's vying for the playoffs, and you know then you know they're going to come at you. Then it's up to you to sort of stand strong, and I guess, you know, apart from that new blade chance in the last minute, we've probably fair to say we did. We
got over the line, yeah. I had no nails left by the end. Once we scored that second goal, I just wanted to leave and forget all about it and check the score 2 hours later, because you knew they were going to come at you. Then, obviously, right towards the end, made that defensive change, and I didn't like that, and I just...
Can I ask a question, Tom? Because we're in a commentary position, and with the set of earphones on and a microphone in front of your face, there are certain things you can't do. When Teixeira was thinking he was Ronaldo and bearing down towards their penalty area and then lost it, was there any expletives from your neck of the woods at all?
One or two.
Good. I'm glad you just made them.
Wasn't there one where I think it might have been Tex, or it might have been Pierce, was dilly-dallying on the edge of our own box as well with the ball.
It was heart-in-mouth stuff. Yeah. And when we've been on the run we've been on as well, you almost just go, this will be 2-2 now. We'll take the point. We'll just move on. And then we kept going and those chances weren't coming. I thought maybe we're going to do this, and obviously that, apart from that one chance, eventually the whistle went. It was just relief. Absolute relief.
Yeah, I mean when it felt like a bit of bombardment for the last couple of minutes of that extra time, when that ball flashed across the face of goal, it all happened so quickly.
Yeah.
And you saw it hit Nubler, and then you saw something in the back of the net. Thankfully it was him and not the ball. But oh goodness me! As soon as that's gone wide, it's such a relief, and it felt quite ironic that it's a player that we always thought wasn't great for us doing that. I won't go into details too much, but there's someone who covers Southend who I sat quite near, and then after full time whistle, I sort of said to him, "I have my heart in my mouth." There, and he went, "Nublai's rubbish anyway." To this way,
it was Nublai. You're fine.
Yeah, and then that full time whistle goes, and just the contrast in emotions from the full time whistle on Tuesday to yesterday says it all, really. And are we safe now? It's still a little bit of time to go, isn't there? But it's such a big buffer, especially with Port Vale losing yesterday. Seems to certainly eases the pain.
I think I have to say yes, because I said we only needed one win and we've now got a win. So if I say we're not now safe, then I look stupid. So I'm going to have to say that we are.
Having said that, I mean, up until the point where we got the second, were you looking at, because you know we have the scores in front, or I do anyway, I have the scores around the grounds in front of us. And I was looking down at Oldham beating Fleetwood, who knew. Scunthorpe beating Bolton, Shrewsbury beating Rochdale. Swindon at the time were the only one losing, I think, MK Dons, and then they got an equaliser. So we're looking at the results around us, and Port Vale aside, who I think at one point was 0-0, for I don't know when they scored.
It was definitely 0-0 at the start,
yeah, cheers. I can't remember what point they scored.
Chesterfield, I think, scored sort of midway through the second half, possibly.
So you're looking at the results going the other way, and you're thinking, it's not fantastic. They're not all going our way. Port Vale then losing was better, of course. They've still got a game in hand. But as I think I said last week, Port Vale, I think it's Port Vale and Gillingham have really got a tough running compared to us.
Well, we've got to play Gillingham on Easter Monday. Every team we're playing is below us, which is amazing, really, because we're so low. But
into Saturday, we had the positions might have changed, but Southend aside, 24th, 19th, 23rd, and
22nd. Yeah, I've got a Gillingham neighbour actually who lives in our block of flats, and I sat out in the garden and she came out today, and she sounded a lot more nervous than I felt, to be honest, about position now. And I think, you know, it's not quite there yet, but it's certainly, I'd say, probably 80% of the way of the way to safety. One or two more points should settle it now for us.
And mathematically, I don't think we are. Obviously, technically, we're not. But you look at the amount of teams that are in between us and that. I remember looking at half-time, I think it was, or some point during the game, and I'd have taken a draw going into yesterday's game quite happily against sixth in the league, but I looked at the table, live table, and we were 2 points off relegation.
Yeah.
And I went, a draw against Southend isn't good enough. We're going to have to win this game. Because the character of this team and the inconsistency, I didn't fancy us going to someone like Coventry, you know, with all this protests. And
it's going to be chaos at Coventry.
Yeah, exactly. And you think, well, who knows what's going to happen? So that's why it was relief at the end, because, as I say, when I looked at that table halfway into the game, I was really, really worried.
Hmm. Mark says he hasn't cooked his bits and pieces this evening. Just been having cocker van, meatballs, and anything meat and two veg. We got a tweet in from Jimmy Dustin. He says, "What are the chances of an unchanged side on Friday? Injuries aside, surely he shouldn't mess with that lineup again."
It depends whether he think the lineup that finished was better than the lineup that started. I suppose that would be the only reason. And I think Konza, he might look at resting. I don't know. I'd like to think yes, actually, but who knows?
I think Crofts and Jacko maybe, because they seem to interchange, and Aribo and Konza maybe. But the formation I'd like to keep that, because I thought that worked well, and I thought McGuinness did really well up front on his own. I think, I don't know how much we're really going to talk about Tony Watt tonight, because obviously he was left out, but I think without him there, McGuinness seemed a lot more free to be able to play his own game. And I don't know, that support from midfield just worked, which a lot of the time it hasn't been recently.
Should we have to mention Jason Pearce, because the one mistake, well, the one blip aside, we look so much better with him on the back four, don't we?
We're going to hear from Jason Pearce later on tonight's show. Right, Dan tweets in, why hasn't De Silva had more game time?
That's another point.
Last two games, been impressed with him, surely same 11 on Friday for a bit of consistency.
Well, he was man of the match on a very poor side, agree, admittedly, on Tuesday, but again, he had another good performance yesterday, and you do wonder why it's taken so long to put him in.
It's ironic, because he actually looks even better when he plays at left midfield, but... because he can run with the ball, he can take players on, and that's where his best position is. Even though we seem to sign him as a left back, but
it would be that way. But I think the last two appearances, he's looked comfortable at left back. I haven't thought worried about it, and that's a testament to the kid. And he's only young, but he looks assured.
Yeah,
and he's got a leap on him as well. It's not as if he can be out jumped either.
Yeah, I guess you have to be at his height.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Right, don't forget, if you guys want to have your say on yesterday's game or on anything else, the Upbeats Walk. If you're part of the Upbeats Walk, like we know Mark was, I'm sure there's others out there listening who were as well. Email us in your story. You can email us studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live, or you can head over to the Charlton Live forum where there's a thread about tonight's show on there. Anything you want to talk about? Obviously, Carl Robertson was a much happier man yesterday, despite the fact he had to be interviewed by me twice, which was weird. I interviewed him once out there, and then he came into the press conference. There was no one there to do it for the club's videos, and I had to do it again.
It took me by surprise, because normally he comes in here afterwards.
Yeah,
but they came straight through the door opposite me. Took me really by surprise.
Yeah, it's good, because there's no one there. Right, so anyway, Carl Robinson came in to speak to Terry, a much relieved man, I imagine.
And that's just me.
Yeah, this is what he had to say after yesterday's 2-1 win over Southend.
Joined by Carl Robinson in the studio after a breathless 90 minutes, but 3 points at the end of it, Carl, and that must be the most important thing.
Yeah, I'm pleased for the football club today. I'm pleased for the fans and the players. I don't think I can ask any more of anybody. To be fair to both sets of players, they both hit the floor at the end of the game through physical exhaustion. We've worked hard for this result. We've worked hard for every result, but sometimes the performances aren't always there. The fans are unbelievable. This in this place, when it gets going, I get so excited by it. But to get this place going, they expect honesty and a work ethic. And once they have that, they give you everything back. And I'm proud of the players and the fans today. And before I forget, so proud of the players at the end, walking into the crowd to the Upbeats and giving them the shirts.
Yeah, nice touch.
It's a great touch. It just shows you there's good people here still.
Well, I don't think that was in any doubt, to be honest, Carl. I think you brought the players into training at the Valley in a week. How much a part do you think that played?
Yeah, I've brought teams here many times, and I've always got excited when I walk through, when you reverse into the gates here, just by the dressing rooms, and you walk out into the corner. You know, it's a special place with a very firm fan base, But sometimes when things aren't going quite right for you, it can also become a fearful place for the players who play for us. And I just felt I want them to understand how important it was. We locked ourselves away in here. Thank you to the groundsman to give us the opportunity, even though he had a little moan up once or twice, but we thank him for that. He always moans, that's what they do. But we just wanted to replicate certain movements and certain aspects of our game, and try and eradicate the fear here. And I think the players listened to everything we did. Obviously, it was it gave us a chance to take ourselves away from the training grounds. A lot, there's obviously the 18s to 23s, and a lot of staff there. And I only brought the players who were fit. So we only had 18 players and the staff who were part of the team. And we just sort of had that one team mentality, and hopefully that helped. But the most important factor that helped was a work ethic. But though tactically we got it right, you know, the system, I don't like playing a diamond, I've openly said that. But I've never had the personnel to really go with the 4-2-3-1 yet, or the 4-3-3, when we have done, some of our best performances have been in that. And we've got to make sure that we move on now and we keep winning games. And listen, it's hard, but today is just a very small step in the direction that we want to go. We've got a very difficult game with Coventry on Friday now. That we want to win that. We don't want to win this, then drag yourselves back into it. I said to the players in there, you've got to go now and beat the teams in and around you. And that's been a problem for us over the course of the season, right from the first whistle to the end of the season. I think we put ourselves a few points clear that zone. There's five, and then there's a few teams on four, so there's a number of teams now with that gap's increased. But it's about us winning games of football and trying to climb up that table. Listen, you've still got, is it four games to go? You've still got 12 points to play for. You could be nice if we could sit here with 60 plus points off the back of a terrible season. And that's not an impossibility if the player's mentality is right. If the player's mentality is not right, or my mentality is not right, it can equally be a 50s. That 50 point mark has been one that we've been looking at for a long time. We've achieved it now. We want to carry ourselves through that and get as many points in that 50s zone as possible, and really turn our thoughts to getting this club back to where it belongs. I got very excited towards the end.
Well, I think you weren't the only one. And almost that the game had everything that's been our season. We had the great start, high tempo,
yeah.
Lovely work from Ezri Konsa, Josh McGuinness getting important touch in, and, yeah. then a great finish from Ricky Holmes. And then 5 minutes later, we switch off.
Well, no, I can rectify that, because I kicked four water bottles and it broke my own foot. Because you can't be having a free head in the box. We work on it, they know their men. And I went to go to town on whose man it was. And just before I said, give me a look at the set piece. And actually what happens is Piercy gets dragged and runs into Ez and trips Ez up in some ways. And that's when he came around the back. So it was just two players colliding. That's how we got free. It wasn't like somebody switched off. Mm-hmm. But then Deck making that great save at 1-1 was a very poignant point in the season, I think. And Jake did his best to miss it.
Yeah, there was.
It's nice the sub comes on and affects the goal.
Yeah, yeah, a couple of huge moments. You mentioned, I was going to mention Declan Rudd. What a vital interception that was, a save. He could have given the penalty. There's so many things that could have happened in that moment,
yeah.
And it just went perfectly for us. So is that the sort of thing that sometimes you've been missing in the last couple of months?
Yeah, you need luck. What is it? Is it a famous quote? It seems to be the harder you wear, the luckier you get.
Yeah, well, but the other thing that must please you is the mentality of going, you know, having that goal chalked off, if you like. We're back at 1-1. We've seen in recent weeks that can affect players. Sometimes we don't then kick on from there and come back. Can't say that about the team this time.
Yeah, no, I thought we were better first half than second half, but I thought we looked a lot more astute in the second half. Our system worked. But it was just nice to get that win. Listen, I don't really care how we got it today. I don't really care, to be honest with you, right now, because it's about just getting as many wins as you can. Everyone always said this time of the season, the tactics go the window, it's the heart. It's the heart and the head.
Yeah.
And certainly had the heart, and we played the game with our head. And that was a very important moment. And what a great day. The upbeat walk, the upbeat game before, then they won 5-0 against Brighton, which was great. Congratulations to them. And it was nice seeing the players coming to the crowd. Them moments mean a lot to me. It's the players went over to PC Keith Palmer's seat to clap that at the end as well. That was nice. So there's been a lot going on at this place. Listen, a lot. And whether it be negative, whether it be positive, whatever it may be, a lot's gone on emotionally at this place for a number of years. And the players have been in the midst of that, and we haven't helped that, because some of our performance have been nowhere near good enough. But and mine as well. It's been nowhere near good enough. I know what I need to do. I know this game inside out. I've been doing it, even though I'm young, I've been doing it for long enough now. And I know what it takes to get out of league, so I've done it twice. I know what I want. I can say to you now, I want to start speaking to players who we want next year. I know who I want. And that's the bit that we've got to move forward with. But we've got four big games in the middle of this, and anything can happen in football. You're never certain of anything until it's mathematically impossible. But mathematically, I want to win this lead down there that we said we took ourselves a point close to Northampton to get maybe another place higher. And that's also important as well.
Tuesday night was probably the lowest I've when we spoke after a game.
It was hard. It was hard. It was and it was nothing to do with being MK Dons. It was a sheer emotion of the event and the memorial and the memory of PC Keith Palmer, and then to top that off with the performance was hard for everybody, wasn't it? And it was a real difficult emotional afternoon, evening, sorry. And hopefully he's looking down and he can be proud today.
Well, will you allow yourself a little lift and a little breath and maybe a smile after Tuesday night, because today you deserve it.
Cheers, thank you.
Cheers.
Eventually manages to turn it, falls to Tony Watt.
Yes!
Strikes it into the far post.
Charlton Live.
Hello? From the home of time. This is Maritime Radio. Greenwich.
Carol, a heavy defeat at Burnley today. How do you sum that one up?
We were good.
Charlton Live.
So I'm back at Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. We just heard there from a very relieved Carl Robinson after yesterday's game. It's interesting. I mean, like, no one's counting any chickens yet before they hatch, of course. But I feel a lot more comfortable now. And Carl's gone back to he's talking about next season. And you were just saying there, Tom, he's talked about next season a lot, isn't he? He's going to have to make sure he delivers if he's still here.
Yeah, I was just saying, I don't think he can have any excuses next year. Obviously, his one will be if he doesn't get players over the summer, and I think we all know what that will be dependent on. But if he is still here next year and he's got the players he wants over the summer, he's got no excuses, because he said time and time again now that he knows what he needs to fix, he knows what he needs to do, he knows what needs fixing around the club. So we'll see. But yeah, he's talking about next season, and as I say, I think hopefully we can start to think like that now.
What did you make of his demeanour when he came in yesterday, Tom?
Well, he looked a little drained, yeah. But as I mentioned in the interview, you know, and he looked on Tuesday night, like, oh, I wouldn't say beaten, man, that's probably not fair, but he really looked down on Tuesday, understandably so, as we all did, to be fair. Looked a little bit more upbeat yesterday, I think, to try and steal your pun. He certainly looked better. He looked emotionally spent. But we're quick to say that when it's not good enough, so I mean, I think it's only right that we should say yesterday he got it right, pretty much. I didn't quite grasp or get where the collision between Ezri Konsa and Stuart Pearce came from, because I didn't see it. Jason Pearce.
Yeah.
Jason Pearce, rather. I didn't see it.
Yeah, he mentioned that in the other interviews as well about the corner, because it was a free header for John White, and obviously that's not good enough. He said, oh, there was a collision between Konsa and Pearce, but I've watched it back a couple of times. I thought, because during the game, didn't notice that. And when he said that, I thought, oh, I didn't see that. I watched it on the highlights. And I was like, didn't see it then. Watch it again. Still can't see it. Like, I don't know what he's talking about. Yeah. To me, it just feels like we fell asleep.
Yeah, I think the only thing I can possibly think of is if Jason Pearce and Ezri Konsa were fairly close. So unless Jason Pearce caught Konsa out the corner of his eye and thought, oh, he's got him. That I could maybe grasp, because it looked like he was Jason Pearce's man. But either way, I mean, as I said earlier on, it was his one blip, apart from dilly-dallying on the edge of that penalty area towards the end, because other than that, I thought he was a rock yesterday. Yeah. And that Robinson was all arms and legs and left little digs here and there. I don't know if we're playing Jason Pearce's interview today. Or
yeah, we will be.
I won't mention what he said about it.
Yeah, cool. We'll come on to that in a sec then. Right, let's jump on to the correspondence. I'm into the emails here. The first one's from Tom Smith. Says, hi, fellas. One thing I thought worth mentioning is how well Southend's fullbacks were in the game. They brought the game to Charlton, every attack usually coming from Dimitri. Wondered what you guys think about this. De Silva is getting a lot of praise, but him and Solly don't seem to have the balance completely right between attack and defence. I think for success next season, we need to sign some very experienced, quick, and most importantly, strong fullbacks to allow us to push on a lot more and force teams back and not so easily able to counter on us. Great, says has a great show. Cheers, Tom. What do you make of the fullbacks?
Well, I quite like Chixon, but you've got to say De Silva's played well since he's come in. I think we know what Chris Solly can do, and he gets back and forward like no other right back we've had for a while. I agree up to a point, but I still prefer to have a more solid midfield because there's, for me, and it happened a fair bit in the first half, there were still times where there was a gaping hole between our defence and the midfield or the forward line, because the midfield were either too far back helping us out in defence, or on the wrong side of the pitch, because especially when Solly going forward a couple of times, there was just nobody anywhere near it. Mm. And that's the bit I think we should be getting. Now, you either, if you're going to do that, you've got to play a five at the back or something, so you have three centre halves and then your two defenders are then basically wing backs who can not worry about getting back quite so often. But personally, I'd like just to have a couple of stronger box-to-box midfielders. And I think if you look at the rest of the sides in the division, especially the ones that are doing well, they've got two really strong central midfielders who are all over the place. And we can't compete against that. And I think one of the reasons we probably did well yesterday is Amos aside, who got around a bit but wasn't physical, I didn't think, Southend couldn't cope with our midfield, and that doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah, excellent. Right, Chris Davin emails in, says, evening, people, Nathan should be really living the dream tonight. Well, he's at home. A decent win from Charlton team who looked like they were trying, very rare these days. Robinson revelled in it, fair enough, well played him. Pity we couldn't do it on Tuesday night after that atrocious showing. Any fans that broke their boycott for the match won't be back anytime soon. Poor sides often rise to the occasion against their betters. How sad that this was a case of a dive of Seaside Towns Football Club. A massive upset, Charlton beating Southend at home, and that's how far we've fallen. Anyway, a win's a win. Season can't end quick enough for me. Shame Holmes and anyone sellable will be gone to pastures new, but that's football under Roland, who in my view will still be here at the helm next season. I will be at the Valley for the Swindon game and hopefully sign off this god-awful season win a win. Congratulations on another successful upbeat stay and walk. And I see they beat Brighton 5-0, champions, every single one of them, in every way. And you can second that, of course. I'm going to hear.
Can't argue with
that. Going to talk a lot more about the upbeats coming on. That is true, though. I guess yesterday did feel like a bit of a scalp, and we were playing Southend.
Yeah, and I think as well, when we left the ground, I was still kind of not disappointed. Obviously, I was really happy that we won, but I was still frustrated. I was like, well, why can't we do this every week? And there were more disappointing things coming out of a performance like that than positives. And we have to change that mentality, because we got so used to that in the last couple of years in the Championship and then this year. Next year, our mentality needs to be that we're one of the sides pushing for promotion. And I think we had that mentality at the start of this season, but it didn't filter through to the whole team, because look how we started. And I think if we can do that for next year and really kick on, then we'll see a different side. But I agree that it's that fragility that we've seen at the moment mentally. But, you know, it's probably got us over the line, which, as I say, is not what we wanted at the start of the season, but it's what we're going to have to accept now. And let's put this season to bed, like he says, and kick on for next year.
Yeah, it's a case of still making sure that we actually back up what happened yesterday with performances for the rest of the season. Because, I mean, we went through that horrible run where we didn't win for 8 games. Then we had 4 good performances, but we only still won 1 in that. And now we've got, there's 4 games left, so I think for the teams below us, games will run out too soon. But, you know, it's still important that we play at a level much more like that than what we saw on Tuesday. And the question is, how do we make sure that is what happens?
Well, towards the end of the season, I don't think there's a great deal we can do to make sure that happens, because we've already seen for most of the rest of this season what happens one week is no bearing what happens the week after or 2 weeks after. So I think, as Tom said, let's just put the season to bed. Let's just make sure we cross the line. And as disappointing, as depressing as it sounds, and I agree with the previous comment that was made, that, you know, it is a bit laughable and an image of where we are, that we're actually lauding a victory over Southend. But it is where we are. We've got to face facts. So let's get this out of the way. And quite frankly, and to be fair, Carl Robinson alludes to it, that the only way we're going to change is with a massive change of personnel. on the pitch. And whether he's allowed to do that, regardless of whether he's here or not, or regardless, a lot will depend on who the owners are, because we've already seen over the last few years, currently, you don't expect there to be a sufficient enough change. We thought that last season, you know, when we got Russell Slade in and it started, we had two or three new players and then it stopped. If Carl Robinson's given A, the money, and B, the ability then to go out and buy the players he likes, then there's a possibility. Will he? Do we know that? We just don't know. And that's the problem.
History suggests, as you said, that he won't. And that's why I think there's so many fans now sort of resting all their hopes on the takeover that's been rumoured for probably about a month now, that there's stuff going on behind the scenes. And
Whether it be a takeover or a quite drastic change in attitude.
Yeah. I know which one's more likely.
Well, there we are.
Right, Richard Church sent this email during the week, actually. He sent it after listening to Thursday's Big Match Preview podcast. So, but it's for tonight's show. It says, "Hi, guys. Just listened to the podcast on Thursday night show. I have no idea how we're going to perform on Saturday, but I'm expecting not much. Brackets will probably win 5-0 now. I can hear the three of you trying to work out what's wrong with our team and how come our players seem to be floundering so badly. In our opinion, our problem is that, generally speaking, our contracted players are just not good enough. There are exceptions, Jackson, Solly, Holmes, for example, but these guys can't carry a whole team."
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And the rest of the squad are just not good enough players. Why do they not appear to care? This is the character of individual, and that's all about our recruitment policy. Another problem is loan players. By very definition, they do not care what happens to this team. Why would they? They will not be here next year, so why bother? They have been rejected by their parent clubs for a reason, and that reason is likely to be that they're not quite up to it. Again, there are always exceptions, but generally that is and will always be the case. One, maybe two loan players can do a job if we have the right ones for the right reasons, but five or six, as we had at one point, is just begging to attract the wrong sort of character. Another problem is, of course, the manager. The statistics show that he has the worst record of any of the 100 or so coaches we've had in the last couple of years. His random rants pre- and post-match clearly illustrate that he knows not what he is doing. He won't be here next year either. Of course, the number one problem is the owner. A fish rots from the head. Substandard player recruitment, as many loans as possible, and just squeaking by on the lowest spend possible is club policy and will not work. We need a new owner, a new senior management team, a new scouting team, and a new coaching team. If we have to go down to League 2 to get this, then I'm actually fine with that. But whatever happens, and wherever we are next season, please God, can we have a new owner? He goes, "Thanks for listening to my email and thanks for being there. Much appreciated." That's from Richard Church. Thanks for that. So there's a few points there. I mean, he talks about that recruitment policy, which is something we've picked up on a few times on the show, because when you're recruiting a player, I mean, anyone who listened to Jimmy's Getting to Know the Network podcast, you know all about the rigorous sort of tests that used to go in under the likes of Kirby or the likes of Powell. Character testing, because when you're bringing in someone into the building in a football club, it's not just the ability on the pitch they have, it's the sort of character they have, what they like when the chips are down, what they like in the dressing room, that sort of thing. And you feel like with you know, the lack of British football connections we've had and the lack of knowledge of the players that are coming in, it feels like that sort of side of it hasn't really done, and that probably explains why it sounded like there's some disharmony in the dressing room last season in particular.
I think knowledge is absolutely correct. I'm not sure British is necessarily an issue, but it's funny that myself and at Mike Tyson 2007 London Dean at Giza, we had a Twitter conversation earlier today, and he reminded me of Lenny Lawrence. And if you look back at what Lenny did, what Curbs did, and what Chrissy Powell did, they all had exactly the same approach. And that was, you bring in people with the right character, with a point to prove, and experience. So three things, pretty much, that then basically mixed with what you had before, what you had already here, and a lot of it was good youth players. Mm. And hey presto, you know, it doesn't sound like rocket science, but the three most successful managers we've had in our recent history, Lenny Lawrence, Curbs, and Chrissy P, all did the same thing. They brought in the right kind of people with the right mindset and something to prove. Now, that could be lone players as well, by the way. Lone players per se, I don't think, are the issue. But bringing in lone players that are into network, lone players, who know they're going to get a gig regardless of how well they play. If they leave here, they're going to go somewhere else on the same salary. It doesn't matter. You bring in lone players who are on absolutely phenomenal wages, and therefore it doesn't matter whether they play or not, and doesn't matter if they perform or not, therefore, then they're not going to try either. But it's not just about lone players either, because we've signed players on good salaries, on good contracts, who also don't care because they've been signed on good contracts, whether they play or not, or how good they are, and they're comfortable for 4 years and probably don't have to work again at the end of it. So there are lots of reasons, and it's not just one that you can pin it down to. But certainly the issue, and it was mentioned there by Richard, that, you know, Brian bringing in people with the right character, whether they're lone players or permanent players, I think is irrelevant. I mean, all right, too many lone players is obviously unstable, but you bring them in with the right character and something to prove. And that was I remember Kirby saying that a lot, and Lenny said it once when I spoke to him. So, you know, you bring them in with the right character and something to prove, that they're gonna work themselves ragged for whatever reason that might be. That might be because they might not give a monkeys about Charlton, but they need to prove something, one to themselves and possibly be to their apparent club or the club that's just let them go.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Curbs used to always use the word hungry, and he used to find it weird. I used to find it funny when he used to say the word hungry, because I never really knew what he meant when I was a bit younger.
But you can see, must be rubbish.
Yeah, you can see what exactly what he means. Now, London Indy Geezer says, great point, Tom. We need a touch of arrogance next season, that we are better than the rest. A winning team will see fans return. And Bob Liskam says, they say it's a game of opinions, but I thought Solly was close to being the man of the match yesterday, which is exactly the same as Stella Steve said in the pub yesterday after the game as well. Right, we had a message on the message board from Addict Son. It said, and this relates back to a piece of audio Alex Seelig tracked down for us, because I wasn't able to record on Tuesday, but it was your PC Palmer tribute, Terry.
Oh, right.
on Tuesday evening.
Yeah, Alex, thanks for that, Alex, by the way.
Yeah, Alex Seelig managed to get a copy over, and I put it out on the Charlton Live Audio Boom page. If you check that out, you can hear it. But Alex Sun said, just listen to Terry's tribute to PC Keith Palmer. It was excellent and dignified. So thank you, Terry.
Thank you, mate.
I agree, it's very good. So like I say, it's definitely worth a listen if you can get over to our Audio Boom page. I'll try and remember to tweet that out after the show as well. Right, we had an email from Andre. This was also after Thursday's show. He goes, hi guys, as always, I enjoyed last night's show, which I treasure in the podcast, in my work commute to work. It says, conspicuous by its absence, though, was mention of the latest news from the Belgian 20. I know this was briefly covered on Sunday, but would this suggest the story has more credibility and you're waiting for further confirmation that we are indeed about to end this nightmare? But I don't wish to jump the gun. Now, I think this is relating to a tweet that was sent by the Belgian 20 at some point earlier on in the week. It was something along the lines of, you know, we know more than we can say. All we know is that they're selling up soon. Something along those lines. Now, it was a very vague tweet. I know the Belgian 20 had been over to Belgium, obviously, within the last week or so, and they once again they met Roland. They have the best contacts, don't they? And they always come into meeting Roland, and this time they threw a load of sort of money, not real money, but paper money over him. And then there's some sort of conversation. Those of them on the forums and stuff sort of suggested that they had a conversation with him. They got the impression, and apparently didn't deny that he was going to sell. So I'm guessing that's what he's going for. I mean, the tweet itself didn't really add much to it, but it got a few people's juices going. But, you know, in terms of further down the line, I'm not really hearing anything solid. I think what the Belgian 20 picked up there was probably pretty much what we've already gathered over the last month or so. Now, there does seem to be a change in in the mentality of Ronan. He does seem to be more willing to get rid of the club.
There are so many ifs, buts and maybes, and something will happen like the little tweak from the Belgian 20 that will get your, as you say, get your juices flowing, and then you'll see something else, or something else will happen where it'll come back down again with a crash. Hmm. So I think trying to be patient is tough. But unfortunately, that's all we've got. We can't force the issue. Nobody's going to know what's going to happen in real terms, because the reality is nobody will say anything until we're much further down the line, if indeed anything is.
Mm. And like I say, I mean, one of the bits that was talked about on the forums and stuff was what we heard about this room that we believed was set up for due diligence. But now I've noticed a couple of people suggesting they thought that might have actually been set up for the
end of year accounts.
No, for the the sexual abuse in football scandal, and Charlton had his own issue with that, and some people suggested that might have been that. I mean, obviously we haven't had it confirmed either way, but there's still, you know, everything I'm hearing certainly suggests this it still sounds positive. It's just a case of whether two parties can come to an agreed number. I mean, obviously there's more than one party out there is a suggestion as well. So
yeah, the bit is you don't know whether or not we're clutching at these straws because we want it to be right.
Mm.
And we want it to happen, and we think that it needs to happen. Rather than there being any truth in it, there can't be too many people left who actually don't really think there needs to be a change.
Mm.
However it comes about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right, Alison Sampson's just tweeted in saying, talking of players who care about the club, what about Harry Lennon? Bias says he's my favourite, but I think he's reliable and works hard. And we haven't seen Lennon for ages. I know he's had an injury. I don't know if he's even back from that year, if he's just not...
I think he's still injured.
He's still injured.
We missed the option of having him. I think that's a fact, because he's left-footed, right? So we missed that option. He made the odd mistake, unfortunately, when he was in the side long-term. But when you think about it, the protection that's given to the likes of Esri and certainly Joe Aribo now, that wasn't afforded to Harry Lennon, because he was just thrown in at the deep end.
Mm.
But I'd certainly like to keep Lennon, because I think he's one of ours for a start, and I think he can only get better, and he's already a very accomplished centre half. So I'm definitely in the camp that needs to have him stay.
Mm. Bob Liskin says, takeover rumour, I'll believe it when Mr. Richard Corley tells me. He's always the man to go to for that. Right, Jason Pearce came in to speak to Terry and I after, although I didn't actually ask any questions, so he came in to speak to Terry after yesterday's game. This is what Jason Pearce had to say after yesterday's win over Southend.
Jason, that must be a huge relief. I mean, back in the side now for a couple of games, straight into a battle. But it must be huge to get those 3 points.
Yeah, obviously before the game we knew how big the game was, and obviously Southend are in the playoffs and on merit, and they're a good team, so we knew it would be a tough game today. But obviously I thought every man stood up today and was counted and gave their all, and it was great to obviously come off the pitch as a player and see all the fans clapping you off after a good performance and obviously a good victory. So no, we're delighted.
Good time to take the lead, 5 minutes in, but then a little collision in the box stopped allowed. They're about to be free.
Yeah.
For the header. At that point, do your souls hit the floor and think, all the good work we've done, they take us back like that?
Well, initially you sort of think, oh, here we go again. But no, I think before the game, the gaffer made it clear to us that if you have a little setback, just stay together and keep going and keep working hard for each other. And I think we really showed that today. We were really pretty performance, and we felt as the players coming off the pitch, we just give everyone was so tired after the game, and we're just delighted to get the 3 points.
Is there a mood in the dressing room now that the knowledge that we've got 4 games left, or 5 games today, that every game is going to be similar? We're going to have to battle like that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you look at the fixtures that we've got, all the teams around us. So every game's not going to be like a cup final. We're going into each game and obviously want to try and win. We know, obviously, it's one win, so we're not going to get carried away. But we're obviously pleased with the performance and have something to build on now.
From your own point of view, you've been missing for a good while now. Coming back must be pleasing for you, because being on the outside and not being able to affect things must be tough.
Yeah, it was frustrating, yeah. obviously nothing against the lads that have come in. Obviously they give their all, but obviously for me personally, it's been my first bad injury in 4 months. It was tough. Obviously watching, I always want to be out there and playing. So yeah, it's been a long time. I'm glad I could come back and help the team get over the line today and get the 3 points, and hopefully I'll be able to help the team towards the end of the season and make sure we stay in the league.
Well, you strike everybody as a player that likes a battle. You got one today. It's a tough old battle with Robinson mostly.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I loved it. It's exactly the sort of game I like. I like to have a battle, and I like to make sure I come out on top. I think it was obviously quite an even battle today, but we had players around us. If someone made a mistake or lost a battle, there was always someone covering up behind them, and that was everyone on the pitch. So it was just pleasing looking everyone in the eye after the game. You knew they'd worked their socks off, so we're delighted.
Any word on from Jake on the goal? Because everybody's saying it might be an own goal, it might not be his. Or does anybody really care?
First and foremost, I don't think anyone cares, but I was right behind him. It looked like he got a touch on it and it came off the defender, so I'd assume it's Jake's goal. But obviously, like I said, we're not bothered how it goes in as long as we get the win. But I let sanity give me the slip.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free.
It's been a delivery towards six off at Bauer, the free header will be tapped home again by Texera. It's 3-0! Again, it's a corner, comes in from Jake Forsikowski at the back post. Bauer heads down, and Texera gets the second of the game. Absolutely bonkers here. Bonkers.
Charlton Live.
Hello? From the home of time. Home of time. This is Maritime Radio. Greenwich.
Get out of the way, Stroud, you moron!
Charlton Live.
And very, very apt this time of year. Listen, after
living
Stroud
up to his reputation. Yeah. People didn't listen to me. I told them
that Stroud mistake on there.
Tuesday Wednesday night on a T-shirt. That
was just unbelievable.
Listen, I wasn't overly happy with the fact that I'd said it, but now I'm slightly more comfortable with it.
I'm overly happy with the fact that we remind you of it all the time.
Yes, I know. Stroud, you moron.
There we go. Right, gonna cover the support the Upbeats walk in a few moments' time. Hearing from the likes of Bob Bolden, Mike Flanagan, Simon Webster. Who else have we got? Paul Mortimer, some absolute Charlton legends, and Jason Morgan, of course, the CEO of the Community Trust. You called him Sir Jason. Is he a sir? Or is he an MBE?
MBE, yeah. No, I'll just do it.
All right. Okay. Called him King or something.
Yeah.
Jason King. right. I just had a tweet in, actually, from Bob Liskin. He says, what's the issue on Twitter with Tony Watt?
I know.
Seems to have taken down his account and noticed. Got slaughtered. So I've just clicked on his account, and so basically what people were saying was he took down all references to Charlton. Yeah. And I clicked on his account earlier, and he's changed his header photo to his goal against Barcelona, obviously. Yeah. That would be my header photo if I'd scored. Absolutely. Against Barcelona. His profile photo is himself in his Scottish kit. If I'd play for England, I'd be wearing my England kit in my Twitter profile. I might even mock one up tonight, actually, and just do that. And then all he put was Scottish footballer when I looked earlier. Now it says Scottish footballer at CFC, so he has put that back in.
I think
I don't know if people are probably. Do you think they're reading too much into it?
I think so, but I did notice it.
Yeah,
I think. Well, I didn't notice it until I saw the Twitter furore about it. I think if you look at after the game, certainly, you know, great win by the lads onto Friday, keep it going. So
he tweeted earlier on today with the hashtag CFC about his fitness regime, and then replied to a Charlton fan who sort of mentioned, "Oh, I can do your 5K, I can do 6K in your 5K time," and replied saying, "Oh, that's really impressive. Long distance is my."
The problem for him is that he's got a history of wanting away, and people are never really sure what his mentality is with his relationship with his club. So I think little things like that suddenly, particularly when we're in I know obviously the win yesterday aside, but you know, he got left out, we've been on a bad run. I see why people leap on it, but as I say, I think people are probably going a little bit over the top, and I don't think his performances necessarily are anything to write home about anyway at the moment. So it's hopefully not as big an issue as people are making out.
Right, we just heard from Jason Pearce there. We missed him big time, didn't we, when he was gone?
We missed a leader.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we got Jacko, of course, but sadly, I don't think anybody really thinks Jacko's legs can cope with 90 minutes at full tilt. And so we missed that presence on the pitch. Actually, it's great if we had both of them out there, because that would probably mean we're closer to the top half than the bottom half. But yeah, just that, just it's not just about winning headers, and because you know you've seen Bauer win headers, we've seen Teixeira win headers, you know, and sometimes do really good interceptions. It's not about that. It's about just his presence. And he seems to be able to marshal the back four slightly better. You know, we got caught out once with that ball through the middle, but it wasn't over the top. I don't remember. I could be proved wrong. I don't remember any balls over the top catching us out yesterday.
I saw before Peterborough. I think before Peterborough, they were doing a drill where the back four were in a line and they were throwing balls into the air and getting them all to move as a line forward and back and head it away. And one of them would come forward and head it, and the drill just looked a bit all over the place. And then they did the same drill yesterday, and you could see him shouting at them all and him dictating that back four. And I don't think any of the others do that. Teixeira and Bauer just look a little bit too like focused on their own game. Solly obviously out wide isn't going to do it, and De Silva's only recently broke in. So it was so different. And then during the game, you could hear him as well. And you couldn't usually hear one of our back four shouting, but you could hear him, even from when they were playing up, defending up in front of the away end. And it's just such a big difference to have someone do that.
Let's be honest, if either Teixeira or Bauer shouted at you, you'd probably go, yeah, all right.
Well, if Jason Pearce shouted at me,
I'd do it.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the characters, we have Tex and Bauer and Pearce have all come into the media room recently for conversations after the game. And you see, like, Bauer is a bit quiet, really, isn't he? Yeah. Very, very sort of softly spoken. Seems like a nice fella. Teixeira, even quieter spoken. English, not their first language. Might not be so confident to shout out. Jason Pearce, he's a hard-nosed northerner. Well, he played for Wigan, at least. I don't know if he's actually from up north. But,
It's the same thing with the first time when Roger Johnson came in. The difference he made to what was a young back four then. He was so vocal, and he really helped them through it. And then, obviously, it's all gone wrong for him since then. But that first time, it was that presence and that leadership at the back that made a big difference. And luckily, because of everything that happened with Johnson that time, we've had Pearce, who's now been able to come in and do the same thing.
Excellent stuff. Just before we go on to the upbeat stuff, actually, quickly, I think you asked the question of Jason there to speak on Forster Cassidy's behalf, like whether he cares, whether it's his goal. I'm not sure the thing to say is no, he don't care, but I reckon Forster Cassidy probably would care. You want your first goal in Charlton colours, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think he'll be desperate for that to go. I think I was doing it more tongue in cheek and more aimed at the rest of the squad. I'm sure they don't care whether he gets the goal or not. But I'm sure Jake Voskowski will want that badly. But I think all of us just wanted to see it go in the back of the net. And when it hit the bar and came back down again, I'm thinking exactly the same as what happened 5 minutes before when it squirmed across the line and wasn't given. I was looking straight across to the linesman just to make sure, because it's just our luck that it wouldn't have been given, even if it had been 2 foot behind.
Yeah, luckily it was. Right. Yesterday was one of the best days in the Charlton calendar. It's the third year, I believe, now. Of the Upbeats Day. So it was the walk from the training ground to the Valley. Host of Charlton legends. I'm going to play the montage first, so you can hear what they had to say, and then we're going to hear from both Terry and Tom, who were on that walk yesterday. And if there's anyone out there who was on the walk who's listening now, we'd love to know your story as well. So you can email studio@charltonlive.co.uk, or you can tweet us at Charlton Live, or you can head over to Charlton Live Forum. Let us know why you went on the walk, how much you enjoyed it, or those of you who were just at the Valley in time to watch the Upbeats game. Goodness me, that was so entertaining. And another big win for the lads. And let's hear it now. So this is a montage of yesterday. It's got it's got all those names I've mentioned in it. So the likes of Jason Morgan, we've got Mike Flanagan, Mortimer, Paul Mortimer, Simon Webster, Bob Boulder. We're also going to hear highlights of the Upbeats game and Carl Robinson's kind words about the Upbeats. So this is a very special day here at the Valley yesterday.
With Sir Jason Morgan, and we're on the Upbeat Walk. And Jason, it's a glorious day and a decent turnout.
Yeah, more than last year. Been a pleasure walking you the last 100 yards.
yeah.
No, 2 miles we've done together, haven't we?
There or thereabouts, yeah.
Well, no, this is second. 10 miles, 10 miles. We did the warm up.
This is the second pub, that's all I know.
Yeah, halfway. I've been told it's halfway.
Yeah, I was told that last year, and I didn't believe them then, and now I know it's not true. But, it's a great thing to be on, great thing to be part of.
Oh, it's brilliant. And I tell you what, the work that goes on behind the scenes with Carl, and I know you spoke to Terry on the show, is unbelievable, and the support we get, and there's a lot of people just, you know, don't want to miss out on today. Staff and the fans turn out, and staff from the club as well. So and we've got the weather. So the last couple of years, it's not been great. So thoroughly enjoying today, and it's downhill this bit, I think.
Here I am, Nathan, struggling a little bit. Man next to me, keeping the stamina up like I used to. I'm struggling here, Malt. How you finding it so far?
I'm actually enjoying it. Funnily enough, I was training last night and sort of damaged my calf a little bit. So I'm walking wounded, but enjoying it. Yeah, it's good fun.
So you pass a late fitness test. I've done the fitness test this morning by having some scrambled eggs this morning. Starting to grit it a little bit, but obviously the start of the day, an amazing turnout for the obviously the upbeats, and I think I knew it was going to be big, but I didn't anticipate how massive it was going to be. There was quite a few people there, weren't there?
Yeah, there is. I did it last year, and I'll do it as long as, you know, they want me to do it. Yeah. It's, you know, last year was big, this is bigger. It's been absolutely fantastic. What a wonderful turnout. A lot of good, a few old faces, which is really good to see. Some, you know, spoke to a lot of fans, talking to me about Charlton's trials and tribulations this season, and it's been lovely so far.
Joined by the legend that is Bob Boulder. And Bob, everybody's on this 9-mile walk. You obviously only on an 8-mile one. Because there was a slight difficulty this morning.
Yeah, my flight was late. Then
flights from Ramsgate can be notoriously difficult.
I'm a very responsible person. I hold my hand. I didn't look at my dial yesterday because I'm so busy. But I forgot about it. So I was just about to have breakfast at 8 o'clock this morning, and Jason Morgan, Chief Executive of Trust, rang me up and said, Where are you? And I was just saying, I'm in the kitchen having some breakfast. And he went, Oh, you're not coming today then? And then I realised it was all about...
Was there that pregnant pause?
Yes, it was. You know, it's just gone 8 o'clock and I thought, quite good.
Fundraising's been pretty amazing so far, and obviously the fundraiser's going to stay open for a while longer after this walk, and obviously after the Charlton Live this is going to go on. So obviously just a message out there for everyone to just give what they can to, obviously, because they're self-funded, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. It's all done by themselves. So anyone listening to this, put your hands in your pocket and give to what is a fantastic cause, and come along and watch. And the more you play a part in it, the more you'll understand how important it is, the more you'll put your hands in your pocket.
The Trust does an awful lot of stuff. I mean, and a lot of stuff goes unnoticed. A lot of stuff, quite rightly, goes noticed. But how important is something like this, the Upbeats Walk, in terms of its profile and inclusion with the fans?
Well, it is, because, as we've always said, it's the project that needs funding. You know, and we're really successful. We work hard on some of the big programmes that we get commissioned to run. But this actually needs money, it needs support, and we know the impact and the difference it has with the players and their training and their kit and the tournaments that go on, the George Best tournament in Ireland, and then I went away with them last year up to Wolverhampton when they played in the Down Syndrome tournament and won that again, and the staffing of it. So it does need the money, and that's why it's great that everyone comes out and supports it and donates and raises some much needed funds.
We're Simon Webster as we're the sort of last leg of the Upbeats Walk as we're coming through Greenwich Park. What about enjoying the day?
Yeah, we've been very lucky. Lovely sunny day, great company. Apart from Bob's caught us up, so we're struggling a bit now.
And it's a great spirit amongst the walkers.
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody sort of understands what it's all for. Charlton Community Trust, you know, run a lot of good projects, and this is just one of them. But we'll see later that the boys really enjoy their football, and I think that needs to just continue, and I think that's what this is all about, so we can continue to fund that project.
Mike Flanagan, today the Charlton Upbeats Walk, how special an occasion has it been?
Well, it's been a great day. The weather's been good. We all took off from the training ground this morning, and we've all met up here, and it's been really good to raise money for the Upbeats.
The Upbeats have been fantastic over the last few years, and the walk, obviously we've done this, I think it's our third one, is it third or fourth one?
Fourth, I think this one.
Yeah, and the fundraising is obviously very important to the Upbeats, to keep the team going and the training, because obviously they're one of the best teams. Charlton Upbeats are if not the best team in the country, maybe. And it's been important for them. It's gives Charlton keeps us ahead of everybody else as well, with training and all costs bits of money, coaching to keep it going. But obviously, we've seen this morning once again the Charlton, the community side of it, and the support for all the things that Charlton do, from the people, our fans, and everybody, and the families all turning out this morning in the hundreds to come and do the walk and raise funds. And it's something that hopefully that will always be that way at Charlton. When causes are needed, the Charlton fans are there.
Well, it's the first time I've walked 9 miles since I've had my hip operation, so it was a good test, but I made it through. You know, it's been good banter on the way from the training grounds, and it's nice to see the big turnout that we've had.
How do you think the boys are going to get on today?
Well, they were magnificent last year. Honestly, they absolutely smashed Derby. I've got to say, it really was a pounding. And
one-sided, wasn't it?
It was very one-sided. And you know, let's hope that Brighton give them a game today, which I expect they will, but that we come out victorious.
They keep telling me they're winning all their games, so and they've beaten these before, so let's hope they can win today and encourage the first team to do the same.
I've got the lineup. I'll talk you through the Charlton Upbeats first. They start with in goal number 1, Tolga Oscar-Ratten. 2, Adam Biggs. 3, James Bowers. 4, William Eli. 5, Paul Moss. 6, Perry Goldstone. 7, Billy Birchmore. 8, Jack Wood. 9, William Cottrell. 10, James Barnes. 11, Joe Pekic. And 12, Jonathan Weston. We are underway here at the Valley. Go left to William Eli. For a crossing opportunity. Lovely strike and a good save by Craig Post. Still in the danger area. Still Joe Pekic. He'll take a shot with his right foot. That's a lovely finish. Right footed shot into the bottom right hand corner, and Charlton have the lead.
Great save by the Brighton keeper, but followed up with a superb strike by number 11 Joe Pitchy. What a great effort.
He might be on it again, Billy Birchmere. Lovely crossfield ball. Oh, it's a lovely finish from Perry Goldstone.
What a great follow-up.
Seizing
Perry
on the opportunity. Sniffing around this 6-yard box, as all good strikers do.
A real poacher's finish there, Terry.
Great long distance effort. Oh, what a goal that is! And that needs the celebration it deserves.
That's a contender for goal of the season, Terry. Absolute superb strike. He just looked up, left-footed, and let it fly. What a goal.
Bottom left-hand corner. Striding out from a defensive position. It's good work from James Barnes. And what a goal that is. Another super strike this time from William Eli.
Well, what an impressive first half of football for Charlton there against Brighton, Terry.
Charlton will look to keep the pressure on, however. It's a throw in field again. It's William Eli. This time takes a shot. Off the post! The left-hand post, and it falls invitingly for Jonathan West. And he bags number 5. And it's ended. It's all over. Charlton come away the victors. 5-0 win. Superb performance from the home side, but you've got to give Brighton huge credit for that second half performance.
And a note as well, the players to go to the Upbeats towards the end was a very special moment for them. They're great people. We've seen the enthusiasm they played in the game before our game, and I think it was a lovely touch by Ricky and the boys who went into the crowd with Deck to really show what they mean to us. And this is what I mean about a unified club, when we all unite together, we're a special place. And we are the club that everyone talks about, and that's the bit that we want to recreate.
Yeah, we had a piece about the Upbeats on BBC Radio London before the game, and I guess the players would have seen those 5 goals. They're not past Brighton today, and would have taken some sort of a pride from that.
We've seen them training last week, me, Jacko, and a lot of the players got involved in what they were doing the other week. Obviously, the walk before the game was always it's a special part of the football club. It's an ingrained importance that they play within the development of this football club, that every person who wears our shirt, whether it be for the disability team, whether it be for the ladies teams, whether it be for anybody on the 6th team right the way through to the first team, we want everyone to feel part of one family, and that's got to be the way, and that's the way I want to build a football club.
There we go, our coverage of yesterday's upbeat walk and the upbeat game, and that was a comprehensive victory, and I think it was won in the first half, really, wasn't it?
Oh, no question about it. Some stunning strikes as well.
Yeah.
Some let fly from all angles, and balls nestling to one corner and then the other. There were very few tap-ins.
Yeah.
And they're a good side, our upbeats. I mean, they go to Belfast, and they're going there very shortly, I believe. I was speaking to Mark Leckie, the director of the Trust, and on the walk, and he said they only missed out last year. I think they drew one game to the eventual winners, and the team that drew against them, who then went on to win, scored in the last minute. Otherwise, they'd have probably won the tournament. It's a huge tournament that a lot of teams go across to. So, the upbeats are a good side, and it's not just a testament to the club, the way they include all the players, include all the kids in the game. It's the fact that they not just include them, but they actually play to a good standard.
Yeah, excellent. The way the legends come out, Tom, I mean, you expect nothing less, really, from former Charlton players. But the thing that does it for me is the fans. Like, how many fans... I mean, the Charlton Life Forum, in particular, they're so, so good at fundraising for this. Absolutely. And there was a big old group of them who were on the walk yesterday as well. But, you know, hundreds of fans. I'm sure you bump into people you know. It's all part of being part of the community, really, isn't it?
It was absolutely brilliant. And I'd not done it before, and arrived at the training ground, I had no idea what to expect in terms of numbers, and there were so many people there, and as you say, then when you're walking along and you get talking to people, I spoke to a few people who listened to the show and people who recognised the voice, and as you say, the legends are there as well, and it's just me and Greg. I was doing it with Greg Stubley, the walk, and we both just said, like, I wonder how many clubs do this, but I'm sure there are others that do these sort of events for their clubs, but there's such a unique feel about Charlton, and that family aspect, the fact that those legends still come back, the fact that all the fans pull together. As you say, Charlton Life, the amount of money they raise each year is just amazing, and it was just such a special day to be a part of.
Yeah
it was great. Tom arrived at, what time was it, about 8:45, wasn't it? Yes. And his eyes arrived about half an hour later.
We heard on Tom's match day diary from when they went up to Rochdale that he's not a morning person. He did his first like audio boom audio bit of the day, and he was clinically dead.
He still looked cool. He had his Magnum PI glass. He's a cool dude.
I had a long night.
Had you been home before? Or?
Yeah.
A few hours. There's plenty of interviews there. We heard clips of the interviews there with the legends, and I'm going to put up the full ones on our audio boom because we've got about half an hour's worth of interviews there. So not enough time to fit them on the show. But I mean, the great one with Jason, he's talking about another initiative that's coming up soon, which is a cycling thing.
It's close to his heart. And Tracy Lieben, I think if you remember, there was
the bike on the
presentation
pitch.
Yeah. With the bike on a pitch with the prostate cancer appeal. And they're riding, as they did last year, there's a Charlton contingent joining with all the other football clubs in the country, riding from Harwich, or up to Harwich, or from all points in the country to Harwich, and then going across to Holland and riding to the Ajax Stadium. And they're doing all that for prostate cancer. There will be a tweet, I think we'll try and get the tweet, the link to the fundraising page tweeted out. We'll do that, and I think on the interview with Jason he mentions the page as well. Tracy Lieben's doing it because obviously very close to her, because her dad suffered from prostate cancer, as did Jason Morgan's dad, who's recovered and is fine. So you know, it's close to a few people's heart. Bob Boulder's doing it, which Jason Morgan's not overly impressed with, because he doesn't stop talking apparently for the whole ride.
As long as he turns up, yeah.
And there's a few Charlton staff doing it as well. So there's a little, I think something like 7 or 8, I think I was told, of Charlton representatives doing the ride. So look out for it. It's in aid of prostate cancer, which is another good cause, and something that, it's not necessarily a trust thing, but it's something that members of the trust are getting involved in.
Excellent stuff. Like I say, we'll put those full interviews on our Audio Boom page, and I'll tweet them out over the course of the next week or so. Now, one of the other interviews that certainly put a smile on my face was the one that Nathan did with Mortimer, because you can tell that Nathan is probably had to run about a mile to catch up with Mortimer, and then at the end of the interview, I'm definitely not cutting this off, because Nathan forgot to stop his phone recording. You can hear Nathan already, as soon as the interview's finished, falling away from the group, and you just hear Mortimer in the background sort of shouting, you can't slink to the back now, mate, you got to keep up.
I left half hour after him. I'm surprised I didn't catch him up. that was never good, right?
Yeah, and you mentioned Tom. You mentioned about how unique we are as a club, but it is football fans in general do come together for this sort of thing, and now it sort of went under the radar probably for Charlton fans yesterday because we had our own walk. But there were some Southend fans who left at midnight from Southend to walk to the game for their own. I think it was a local children's hospice. And now that is incredible.
It's incredible, and I hope the Trust don't get ideas about that sort of thing. Otherwise, it'd be on their own.
Yeah, so that was a long old poke. So yeah,
well done them though. Superb.
Yeah, superb. Yeah, and I hope they've raised lots of money for their cause as well. But like I say, congratulations to everyone who did the walk yesterday and to everyone involved in the fundraising. I'm sure there's still time to chuck a few quid the Upbeats way, because they are self-funding. And if you're at the Valleys and you saw the Upbeats game, you'll basically, I mean, if you spent 15 quid to go and watch the first team, you'd probably spend 25 quid to go and watch the Upbeats, because when they first started
the initiative, it was you had to pay a fiver to register, and still sort of best part of, I can't remember how many was on the first one, I missed out unfortunately, but second one there was something around 180-190 people did it. This time there was 200 plus, I think 220, 230 I think was the figure quoted. So, and this time you didn't have to pay. They're asking you to donate, but you didn't have to pay a registration fee. And you still got your T-shirt, and you still got a pair of multicoloured socks. I don't know if you adorned a pair of
I haven't got them on now, but they're in my cupboard for tomorrow.
So, they didn't ask for cash up front. So, what I'd like, I mean, it'd be really great if we could swell those numbers. I mean, it's such a feel good thing, honestly. I mean, walking 9 miles sounds a lot, actually, but look, if I can do it, anybody can.
Yeah.
But it goes so quick. You're talking to fellow fans, you can get to talk to legends, they're more than happy to have a chat.
Yeah.
They give you water, they give you coffee to start, and pastries, and it's just such a feel good day, and you're doing it for a reason that you then want to know, well, if you're not sure why people do it, just watch the clips or the highlights of that game.
Yeah,
and the joy on those kids' faces, it's just bliss.
Yeah, the whole game's still up there on Facebook Live, I think, on the club's page for that. And I was especially delighted to see James Barnes playing so well again, as he does every year, because I went to primary school with James. He was in my little brother's year at primary school, and he's been the mainstay in the Upbeats team.
Quality player.
Yeah, and we had him on the show about 3 years ago. Yeah.
They're just lovely. I mean, there's so many things. I challenge anybody to not raise a smile.
Yeah.
You just have to be in their company for 5 minutes, less probably, and you just get wrapped up in it. Yeah.
Disappointed this year that we didn't get an interview with a dog again.
Well, Bailey, bless him,
Bailey was ill, so he got
slight problem with his back legs. I think got pulled up lame. I wish I could remember the
Bailey.
Bailey was there, but I couldn't catch Ray up because I was in the back group. And last week, I think if you remember, myself and Tom were here. He was saying about getting the gear away, and I looked up looking for assistance, and it was all gone. So I spent another 20 minutes putting the stuff away, and I had to catch him up. So I had no chance of getting near the front this time. Yeah. Last year I managed it by halfway, this time no chance. Yeah. I'm older.
Never mind, right. You are older, more experienced in walking. We've got an email in from Bob Knight. It says, "Hi guys, have I missed the discussions about the last part of the Getting to Know the Network podcast? The explanation that the network was set up to supply Standard Liège with feeder clubs is totally believable. Since the network no longer own a premium club, the whole philosophy goes out the window. Surely this, more than anything, would convince Du Châtelet to sell." Now, I'm sure you've all heard the last episode of the Getting to Know the Network podcast. It's just a superb bit of investigative journalism from Jimmy, and it's certainly worth a listen if you haven't. It's out there on iTunes. But that did seem like that was a conclusion that Jimmy and his team came to after their months and months of work on this podcast, is that the whole network was set up as feeder clubs for Standard Liège. I mean, that was something that was talked about throughout the last 3 years and denied, but it did feel like that could have been the case, because none of what has really happened makes any sense. So.
Well, and still doesn't. And even the Standard Liège feeder, I mean, as much as that was what was hinted, probably not the right word, but it was alluding to. But then you consider that he didn't have Standard Liège for the last year, then it makes even less sense, because he had to give up Standard Liège because St. Troyden got to the top division. So if it was going to make sense at all, you'd switch the focus to supplying players to St. Troyden, wouldn't you? That would be my assumption. What would happen? And it's his home team club. That would make slightly more sense than
we've hardly sent our cream of the crop there. Igor and Ceballos there. Haven't we?
We haven't actually done it at all, have we? Really?
Well, Igor and Ceballos.
Yeah, but they weren't asked to stop. Well, they were, I suppose, eventually. But you know, they were the circular players in the first place. So, I mean, look, does any of it make sense?
As we know, as we've discussed over the last few years.
Well done, Tom, though. I mean, it's superb, superb stuff. And I don't know, do we know when the awards for that
I don't know if you can still vote for the British Podcast Awards, but if you look at the Getting to Know the Network podcast Twitter page, they're still going for that. And my brother won a T-shirt off him, actually, for voting for him.
Did he?
Yeah. I don't know. I forgot to ask Josh about that. Yeah. So he's got his own Getting to Know the Network podcast T-shirt.
I think you should sign that and auction it for something.
What, for my brother?
No. For the Upbeat.
Oh, right. Yeah, maybe. a couple of minutes left on the show. So just very quickly, I guess we should look ahead, because I'm not 100% sure there's going to be a show on in midweek, because of the Easter breaks. I'm going away up north for a few days before coming back for the Coventry game. And Tom's off sunning himself in Suffolk or somewhere.
Coventry.
So, come on, you're just going to Coventry.
I'm just going early.
Yeah.
It's a well-known hotspot.
So we should also very quickly look ahead to our game with the Checker Trade Trophy winners. They could have got relegated yesterday, but I don't think they did. So,
no, I've checked now, they haven't.
Yeah, so we could relegate them next Saturday.
They're on a roll now. They won at Wembley, they won yesterday.
Yeah. The big Charlton boys are coming to town now, though, of course. And, I mean... All things aside, there's going to be huge protests, and if there's nothing left to lose for Coventry fans, is there? So, I mean, they've disrupted games on the pitch before. I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen.
It could be a scary one, couldn't it? Well, scary is probably not the wrong word, but it could be a lively one.
Yeah, and I guess looks like they have hit a little bit of form a couple of games. It's a shame Russell's not there again. It would have been nice to have seen him again, but
yeah, I'm sure you would.
Yeah, but we go into that game now, and I guess, like we say, we're feeling a lot more comfortable now. I'm feeling fairly safe, but you know, you'd be a madman to count your chickens just yet. And I guess if we can get 3 points up there, then that should see it off, really.
Actually, in terms of pure football, because the pressure's probably a little bit off them. Well, and I say that because they've won two games in a row now, so they're bound to be a little bit up. The pressure should be off us because we've just won. Things are a little bit easier in that respect. So, in theory, it could be a good game of football. But the reality might be completely different,
I think,
of course.
The reality is that the football itself is going to
be secondary
to what's going on in the stands, or potentially still on the pitch, depending on what people have got planned.
Yeah, and there's going to be a joint protest between Cardiff and between the Fight the Jimmy Hillway Alliance, which is, I think, starting at 2 o'clock. There's going to be some sort of march down towards the ground in the... You know, remember the scenes here at the Valley when all the pigs were launched onto the pitch. It's going to be the same two teams meeting up to protest again. So that'll be very interesting next Friday. But unfortunately, we've got no more time to talk about it because we've run out of time on tonight's Charlton. I've been another packed show. Thank you to all of those who we interviewed on yesterday's support the Upbeats walk. Terry, thanks for coming in this evening.
Cheers, Louis. Thanks, everybody.
Tom, thank you.
Cheers, Louis.
This has been Charlton Live. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Don't forget, you can still donate to the Upbeat, so make sure you do that. Go over to the Trust website and get your money out. Chuck them a tenner or so they can play football for a little bit longer. Right, I've been Louis Mendes. This has been Charlton Live. I hope you've enjoyed it. We'll see you whenever we're next in, because we're not quite 100% sure when that is yet. See you later.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.